the final trappings of Britain's long hand disappeared at sunset when the chargé d'affaires, Mr. Ronald Burrows, presided at a ceremony outside the British Embassy at which the Union Jack was lowered.
November 1967 in Aden, now part of Yemen. The withdrawal of British forces from the region was the start of a wave of pullbacks east of Suez, caused by the UK's economic decline. A similar reassessment of Britain's role in the world is now underway. Dr. Michael Williams lectures in international relations at Royal Holloway College, University of London.
At some point, a reckoning comes with how much you're spending, and that's where we've gotten into, unfortunately, a deep hole because of the economic collapse around the world. That's going to affect expenditures, and it comes down to what's important. And you've managed to balance the two in terms of domestic and international. But I think ultimately people say it's great to intervene or do peacekeeping or do development operations in Africa, but if you've got people who can't get access to education, who can't get a hospital bed, who roads are falling apart, shouldn't we do that first?
Despite the withdrawal east of Suez, Britain has continued to play a global role. And over the past 13 years, that's meant fighting several wars. Sir Kevin Tebbit is a former permanent undersecretary at the MOD and is concerned about where this has left our armed forces.
I think the issue is not that the current activities are unsustainable, but we have been stretching our armed forces consistently over the past decade, and that, as a result, has left us extremely tautly stretched, some would say very overstretched, and that is, I think, the problem, coupled with the cost of the forward equipment programme, which is necessary in order for us to be able to cope with uncertainties and risks in the future, not just be successful in today's operations.
To make matters worse, the new government needs to make big spending cuts to reduce the budget deficit. Michael Williams at Royal Holloway doesn't expect defence to be protected.
From people inside the Conservative Party that I've been speaking to for a long time, they've said that the NHS was ring-fenced, the development budget supposedly as well, and education to some extent, to prove this is a different Tory party. The result, of course, means that certain other departments are going to have to face some serious cuts, and defense is one of them. And I know that people inside the Ministry of Defense are very concerned about this, and it'll be very difficult to, you know, you can only slice this so many ways, and that's most likely the public don't want the cuts to the NHS and education and domestic affairs. They want cuts to defense, and that's probably what's going to happen.
The fear is that budget cuts at the MOD would inevitably affect those in the front line, according to Malcolm Chalmers, the director at the Royal United Services Institute, or RUSI.
If we're talking about 10% real cut in defence spending over the next 5 or 6 years, then arithmetic suggests that means a 20% cut in personnel, more or less.
And by personnel, you mean?
I mean soldiers, sailors, airmen, as well as civilians. But most of the personnel costs in the Ministry of Defence are for military personnel. So the idea that you can simply cut civilian personnel and reach necessary savings, I think, is unrealistic. There are going to have to be significant cuts in personnel spending and the number of personnel. There's a balance in the defence budget, which isn't exactly right, but there's a balance between different sorts of capabilities, between personnel and equipment. And you can't simply take away one part of the equation and leave the other one standing. Those are integrated commitments.
But you're talking about an integral reduction of something. It's not just trimming the fat across the board. You need to actually say that an entire thing that we currently do, we will no longer do.
Yes, this defence review will lead to a reduction in the number of ground formations in the Army and Marines, but where, that's the question.
The trouble is, we're still fighting a war in Afghanistan. Sir Kevin Tebbit believes there's a risk this could skew any decisions about what to cut.
We are going into a defence review in a rather unique period. We are still conducting that review while we are in conflict. I won't say we were in the midst of conflict in the way the United States is. Nevertheless, we are conducting this review while our troops, our people, laying down their lives for our interests. And so we have immediately to ensure that we continue to provide the resources necessary to sustain those engagements. So we have to do that at the same time as we sustain the longer-term perspective against uncertainties in the future, which are by no means minor or easy to handle with a lower insurance policy.
The expected cuts to defence spending make it unlikely that we'll be able to do as much in the future as we have in the past, so says Dr. Michael Williams at Royal Holloway.
For the size of a country within the economy, which is quite strong generally, it's done an awful lot. It's done way more than you would expect of it. That's one of the things that makes the United Kingdom very unique. Whether that's sustainable, of course, I think a lot of people would question. And perhaps if Tony Blair had chosen more carefully his interventions. Sierra Leone is an example of an intervention that went pretty well and was definitely doable and achievable. But something like Iraq, obviously not legitimate. And something like Afghanistan, while legitimate, is perhaps also just not feasible. And you have to recognize your limits. And that's probably what the next government is going to be preoccupying itself with, is recognizing limits.
But this doesn't mean that new threats won't emerge. For Lord Michael Jay, former head of the diplomatic service, Britain will need to defend its interests from emerging threats, but increasingly in tandem with other nations.
It's pretty clear that we cannot pursue the sort of foreign policy we would like to pursue entirely on our own. Therefore, we've got to do it with others. At times, that will be with NATO. At times, that may be with the United States. So we've got to be pretty careful about that. At times, that needs to be within the EU or with other EU countries. There's no particular reason why that should be a problem for us if it makes sense for Britain to operate together with, let's say, France or with other European countries, to keep the peace, let's say, in a part of Africa where the Americans do not want to get involved, then it's something we should do. If it's in our interest to do it, we should do it.
Conservative Party rhetoric would suggest we'll neither get closer to the US or the EU. Notwithstanding their intrinsic Euroscepticism, the Tories have also, in recent months, suggested that Britain's relationship with the US should be solid, not slavish. Dr. Robin Niblett, the director of Chatham House, believes that Britain and America's priorities will become more detached from each other over time.
The United States, inevitably, as a country that is at the heart of the security structures in East Asia, has to be concerned about the rise of China, about how India plays out. And Britain is fundamentally not particularly relevant to how America deals with China. The UK, on the other hand, is affected directly by the rise of extremism, Islamist extremism in particular, within its society and within other European societies. We are affected by any future instability in the Balkans. We are affected by sub-Saharan Africa instability, which drives migrants through the EU, often right up to Britain.
This suggests there's a logic to the EU playing a bigger role in defence. But Professor Malcolm Chalmers from RUSI is sceptical.
Right now, I think there are relatively limited indications that this is going to happen, partly because the main European countries have got often quite different strategic perspectives, partly because the United States is not pulling its horns in, although it may do so in future. I'm sceptical about whether there's going to be a rapid acceleration of European cooperation on defence. At the margins, I think there may be more cooperation in procurements, but something bigger, I'm more questionable. And as for the idea that we're going to move to a much greater sharing of military capability in order to get value for money, I think that's actually rather unlikely.
All indications are that Britain's future role in the world is likely to change. Robin Niblett from Chatham House believes the UK is trying to come to terms with a radically altered global landscape.
We're no longer one of the one or two or three leading powers in a Western-dominated world. Now, as we ought to state the obvious, China is increasingly influential. India is becoming influential. Brazil, Russia's refining its footing, especially in its own particular region. And we have the emergence of a G20, which reflects this much less hierarchical world and a world of more dispersed power. Britain has been one of the midwives of this new G20 world. It was partly our intellectual idea, but having helped create it, I think we're thinking, hold on, where do we fit in it? Maybe we won't be as strong or as influential. America, which was partly our anchor for our global voice, is having bilateral conversations that don't engage us as much.
Lord Michael Jay is convinced that Britain's reliance on world trade will mean that the UK will have no choice but to maintain a significant international role despite the prospect of cuts to our armed forces.
Things are much less clear-cut now. We have economic and political power shifting away from a sort of United States plus Europe towards China. We're going to see a world in which the two major powers are the United States and China. That raises some quite difficult issues for how Europe, European countries, the European Union fits into that. That is the basis for our action, rather than do we want to act with the Americans, do we want to act with the Europeans? We need to be more, if you like, more British, more pragmatic, to be clear where our own interests lie. We are an open economy. We are a trading nation. We have a strong and, in my view, very effective diplomatic service. I think all those things mean that we will be an effective operator overseas, and we should be an effective operator overseas, not in any kind of ideological sense, but because that is what our interests require us to have.